Hey, it's Andrew. Just quickly before we start this episode, I want to tell you about one of my favorite podcasts, the Secure Ventures podcast. The host, Kyle McNulty, interviews cybersecurity founders about what they are building. I enjoy it because Kyle focuses on their technology, what it solves, why they build it, where it fits in the market. Also, listeners can understand the why of these startups. In some ways, it's a great complement to my own podcast where I focus on the go-to-market side, not the technology side. He's had some great guests on recently, for example, the CEO of Reality Defender, when they talked about the ins and outs of deepfake detection. He's had the co-founder and CEO of Ghost Security, and also the co-founder of Radical, Chris Peterson, who was incidentally a founder of Logrhythm, where they talk about the role of AI in the SOC. This is not a paid promotion. I just simply enjoy what Kyle is doing with his interviews and get a lot out of them. Check it out. It's the Secure Ventures podcast. Now on with this episode. Getting new reps ramped up is a critical but often underinvested function, especially at startups, where the cost of a slowly ramped seller or not setting a seller up for success is huge. In this episode, I teamed up with multi-time cybersecurity sales leader EJ Easton, and we both offer three recommendations for anyone who's about to hire some sellers and wants them to ramp quicker. Welcome to the Cybersecurity Startup Revenue Podcast, where we help cybersecurity companies grow revenue faster. I am your host, Andrew Monahan. Our guest today is EJ Easton. EJ is a multi-time sales leader at multiple cybersecurity companies. EJ, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Andrew. Pleasure being here today, and I appreciate the opportunity to collaborate on this topic. I think it's one that's hugely important, particularly for organizations just getting started and critical to get it right out of the gate.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's something that you and I are both pretty passionate about, although we're coming to it from completely different angles. But as you're right to say, I mean, I think it's something that a lot of companies, you know, are probably wishing they could do a little bit better at. And, you know, our job today is to give them some ideas about how to do this better. Well, let's move on to the business side of this, EJ. So we're talking today about bringing new sales reps, new sellers into a team. And we're obviously the goal when someone comes in is we want them to be ramped up and as productive as fast as possible, right? And, you know, you hear stories where, you know, your enterprise length sales cycles and it can take many, many months, quarters, and sometimes over a year for a seller to actually be ramped up and productive. And, you know, depending on the state of the company and how you're trying to grow, it can either be a huge accelerant if you do this well, or it can really be a debilitator if you don't do it well. And, you know, I've got some experience having built a whole bunch of these programs for companies, and you've got some experience having been someone who has tried to drive having these programs at different companies, and you've learned a few things along the way. So our job today is to offer three ideas or three tips or three recommendations for the audience each that they can kind of wrap their head around and go off and do. What's your kind of general, you know, view about onboarding and what its role is?
I think the ability to onboard people and put them in the optimal position for success is critical to every company. Frankly, I think when you hire people, if they're not achieving the success, I think you have to turn back and look at what you've done, what you can do differently, what you can improve upon to help them get to the right result. I don't see people joining companies with the idea of failing. I think they join with the idea of being successful. And so it's incumbent upon us as leaders to put together the right program to help them be as successful as they can possibly be. Certainly, you get into a position where you have to go back and replace people. That cost is exorbitant. And I think every company should put the appropriate level of diligence into this effort because it's critical. It goes straight to your bottom line. Get it right, you'll see the impact. Get it wrong, you'll feel the impact.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. You know, what I've experienced is that, you know, you ask any sales leader, is ramping up and onboarding important? And they'll, you know, 99 out of 100 will say absolutely. But then when you look at what actually happens when someone joins, especially early stage, I get there's resource constraints and everyone's doing the best they can. But, you know, if you have 5, 10, 15 reps in the team, it's actually really important to the success of the company, never mind the team, that these people get ramped up quickly. And often it's not something that's invested in or thought about that well.
Yeah, I would agree. To me, this is a good onboarding, generally leads to a level of success that can be the launch point for a new rep having momentum, which to me, that's a critical path. Everybody wants to come in the door and contribute. They all want to figure out a way to be relevant to the business, relevant to the results, relevant to the contribution of building the company. And the onboarding, I think, is a key piece of that. You got to get it right.
Well, let's get into our ideas then. I'm going to kick you off with your first one. Why don't you lead us off and I'll ask some questions if I need to.
So for me, the number one, I think most companies do sales mentoring. I think equally important to that mentor and fundamental to it being successful is the double comp and quota retirement piece. I don't know a lot of organizations that do this, but I think it's actually critical. It keeps your seasoned rep, your mentoring rep, engaged all the way through the process. It also helps them to understand the prioritization of getting somebody in and on board. And for the new rep, you have the opportunity to learn what's worked, why, who to sell to, why to sell, how to sell, et cetera, in terms of the specific company that you're representing. So putting the double comp and the quota piece into this ensures that that mentoring rep has skin in the game from go. And for as long as you run the program, I think it's incredibly important to keep that mentoring rep engaged to the result. That for me is top of list.
So whenever you say double comp, there's going to be a finance person or an ops person just quaking in their boots about the cost model of double comping people. So in practicalities, what are we talking? Is it like for like? Is it a lower rate? How do you think about that?
I think it's like for like. I think the comp program that is established for a new rep is the comp program or comp plan. I think having the new rep on a plan, typically there's some level of ramp, but what you want is them contributing, them driving, and them feeling like they are intricate or integrated to the business, like they're integral to the result that's created. And the biggest part of this is to help them develop momentum. Momentum tends to feed upon itself. By the way, having the mentoring rep also means that you've got firsthand experience or knowledge relative to coaching. You're able to supply direct feedback relative to what's working, what isn't working, where improvements can be made, and to put that rep in a better position to capitalize on what they bring to the table. It's a win-win for the company. And the alternative to that is having a new rep that needs to move out of the organization. And there's a significant cost that's associated to that. So I'd prefer to put them in a position where they can win and that they can be contributing to the company as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I love that unique take, though, of having the comp lined up as well. Because you know, if you're one of the top reps of the company, they often view it as a bit of a drag on their own activities if they have to go and, you know, in their minds, you know, baby someone else to bring them in. Some are naturally more helpful and want to do that. And, you know, some are not, which is fair enough, right? They're there to achieve their main job. So I like the idea of figuring out the comp side as well as just saying, you know, there's someone to be your mentee for the first 3 months or 6 months of their existence of the company. So I love that unique take. Let me move on to my first point. So I'll tee it up like this, is I think that, you know, someone, when you're planning for someone to come on board, some sort of conversation happens about, well, what do we need to train them in, right? And usually in the top one to three things on that list is we need to train them in the product. And then usually nowhere on the list, or if it is anywhere right at the bottom, someone will say, oh yeah, they should probably understand the buyer as well. They should understand our ICP. And my recommendation is that is the wrong way around. And, you know, I get it, right? If you're a product person and you're a CEO and you're building this amazing product, you've got a lot of emotional attachment to how awesome your product is. But at the end of the day, your seller success is going to come from their understanding of the buyer, their fears and frustrations, the problems that they're experiencing, how they get promoted, how they get fired, things like that, right? And I have this kind of idea in my mind that, you know, if you imagine a onboarding program, that at least the first fifth of it should really be all about understanding the buyer, understanding who you go after, why you go after them, what it is they're looking for, what do they do right now, you know, what's the gaps, things like that. And I think it puts a very different lens as, you know, if someone comes into the company, you get a chance to fill their brain with only so much, right? And if you can fill the first part of their brain with a complete understanding of the buyer, then you got them off on the right foot mentally more than anything else. And especially if you're hiring more junior people, right? If you got the 15-year vet in cybersecurity, then, you know, they've probably got a good understanding. They might need a top up, but you're not going to hugely change their understanding of the buyer. But if you got someone who's a bit more junior, you're hiring SDRs, people like that, this is absolutely your chance to influence in the right way. And a couple of ideas about how to do that, because I think it's easy to say, go understand the buyer. And often that's what happens, right? Is they'll say, you need to understand the buyer. And then the conversation ends and then your rep has to figure out how to go about doing it. So I would offer three different ideas. One is, I bet you inside the company somewhere, there's some recordings of interviews with customers or interviews with prospects. Now, I've seen this happen where you have a kickoff and you bring a couple of customers in and they chat for half an hour, 45 minutes, take some questions. If you have those recordings, any new rep should absolutely be listening to those. If you've got in the founders, when they were doing their customer discovery, oftentimes those calls are recorded. I highly encourage, you know, try and dig those out, the archives, wherever they are, and listen to those. So that's one way. I should go look for actual interviews with customers and prospects. Second one, of course, is we're living in a world of conversation intelligence tools such as Gong and Chorus and things like that. Now, I think the temptation is that you listen to those to hear what other reps say and do. I think the first pass of that should be, well, what does the actual customer say? What does the prospect say? Let me listen to the first, whatever it is, 15 minutes of a discovery call when we're in the meat of the problems they're facing and understand just that bit right there at the gate. And then the third thing I would do is, you know, YouTube is a gold mine of information, right? Of these videos with all sorts of different things. One of the things that you'll find is if you're, let's say your target profile is, I don't know, cloud security engineer, or is one of them, I bet you there's videos on YouTube for things like, you know, how to be a cloud security engineer, how to get promoted to be a cloud security director, what training you need to be a cloud security, things like that, right? There's going to be a bunch of interviews in there. And you're going to get little nuggets in there about what it is they go through and why they do things in certain ways. So there's three ideas about how to focus on the buyer.
I actually think that this is a huge point that you're making. It dovetails very nicely with my second point in this. But I really like what you said there in terms of the buyer persona and the understanding and that training that is about what is happening at the field. I think you're right. People turn into the product side of things. Often it's my belief that that lacks context. But if you get the customer input, if you get the customer interaction piece of that, then you can start to create the context around the go forward. And I think it's a critical point, Andrew.
Well, since you brought up your number two, let's go into what that is.
Right. Thank you. So for me, a second point would be keeping new reps focused on qualification. It's my experience that you hire people and immediately they go through their contact list, you know, people they've worked with in the past. And they spend 90 days and they burn that list without understanding what it is that they're in the market of or market for. So to the point that you just made, going in, getting that context, being able to do the positioning, all of that takes time. Having reps, again, with a mentor engaged, I think that your new reps focusing on the qualification, and it can be basic qualification, it could be more advanced qualification, it depends upon what you're selling, to whom you're selling, et cetera. But focus on qualification is a critical path. And going into the existing pipeline and being able to call down, walk down that pipeline just with a focus on qualification, I think is a really good exercise. It would be my recommendation, my strong encouragement that all of those calls should include your mentor relationship as a part of that effort. You may find yourself in a position where as part of your qualification, the mentor is able to start working in value propositions, different personas that need to be at the table, should be at the table, or the opportunity to pivot to another area of the organization that is a more likely buyer. So a new rep coming in and thinking that they're going to just roll out a value proposition and have their existing customers, you know, those relationships say yes, I think it's a miss. And I think what ends up happening is those relationships get squandered. They get lost. And when I say lost, I mean, it then takes a lot more time to get back in there relative to the company you're representing. So keep it simple. Focus on the qualification. Have your mentor engaged and put them in a position where they can start to extend value beyond and help to develop your talk track, your walk track, and your deeper level of qualification. That would be my two, Andrew.
You know, I like that a lot. One of the things that I tell new hires when they come in is their superpower often is they're not mired in product details, right? They don't have 2 years of head trash about what parts the product did or didn't work 2 years ago. And, you know, whether that's a strong or a weak bit or, you know, limitations, things like that. But if they've been selling for a while, the one thing they can always fall back on is asking great questions, right? You know, is it easier for someone on the spot to make a compelling point about a value prop and a use case and a story and things like that? Or is it easier just to ask a question? And I feel like it's always going to be easier to ask a question. Now, to your point, you know, if you've got the business awareness of what's going on and you've got you're thinking about business qualification questions, then you're going to have someone in a very powerful spot. So I love what you were saying about that. My second point, and this is going to sound unbelievably fundamental, but I'll tell you, it's what's often missed, is to figure out what exactly you want someone ramped up on when they come in. And I'll play it out to you like this. I've seen this multiple times. It's incredibly easy for the head of sales, couple of the sellers have been on board for a while. If you sit them down for half an hour and say, okay, let's make the list of things that this person needs to know, it's very easy to come up with a list of 50, 70, I don't know what, 100 things that they need to know, right? They need to know about this thing, they need to know about that thing, they need to know how we run Salesforce, they need to do the qualification side, they need to know the features, they need to know the use cases, they need to know some stories, they need to know, right? It's always a long list of things that come up, right? And I think that's kind of misleading, right? I honestly do. I think the much more interesting thing to say is, what is the short-term goal that this person should be given in terms of their success of the company? And by short-term, I mean by weeks, right? So if you have clarity to say that, for example, take your second point, you know, at the end of week one or week two or whatever week you choose, this person should be able to have a business qualification conversation with a CISO or a VP of security, right? Then it becomes a lot clearer to say, well, what do we need to do to enable that to happen, as opposed to loading them up with the 55 things, other things that we think they should probably know at some point, right? And once you get clarity around that, what's early success, right? You know, it might be, for example, okay, they need to reach out to their network, I don't know, within 2 weeks, let's say. So what do they need to be able to do to be able to pick up the phone to their network and, as you say, not squander the chance? So it's often that precision about what you actually want them to be ramped up on is going to give you the clarity about what you then need to give them or work with them on to have them be successful. And I think oftentimes it's kind of lost in a long, long list of things that it's be nice to have to know. Classic example I'll give you is on everyone's list is they need to understand pricing. And I'm going to bet that at most companies, no rep is going to need to know pricing at least for the first month, maybe even longer, right? They might need to know, okay, we price this by node or employee or whatever it might be, but they don't need to know all the intricacies and how you different SKUs stack up in different ways, right? That's a down the line thing. Why would you even, you know, cloud their minds right now with pricing stuff when actually the most important thing is probably something completely different?
Andrew, I think this is a really great point. It's amazing how much noise can be injected into an onboarding process and how that really detracts from a new rep coming in and getting to a point of productivity. We used to measure time to productivity on new reps. You know, I've seen 12 months, which is unbelievable. And a big part of all of this, you know, me thinking about onboarding and how to impact change is the recognition that when you're measuring at that length of time, there's a problem. There's a problem. And to the points that you're making, I think this is critical. And actually, my next point kind of layers in with that. And that is, how many companies go out there and request that a rep put together a 30, 60, 90 day plan? More importantly, how many companies actually deliver to a new rep a 30, 60, 90 plan? And within that, there's an element of setting expectations. There's an element of requirements, and going back to our prior points, pulling them all together to make it sensible, realistic, achievable, but also critical to developing momentum and to getting to a point where they are capable of driving things forward. So the requirements piece of it, the expectations piece of it, I think that there's an element of process that comes into this that companies can do a much better job of. Within that, more and more, today's environment is about team selling. So what's the handoff with pro services? Where's the engagement with finance or sales operations or even the support organization? For new reps, contribution can be measured on a lot of different fronts. And while everybody wants it to be about the bottom line, sometimes that is about being able to get a customer in a support situation to resolution quickly. Sometimes it is about pro services engaging to deliver value quickly so that the next sale comes into the gun sight. So for me, point three would be about understanding all of the support mechanisms that can help a new rep come on board and get to productivity quickly. It's about putting those expectations out into the open. It's about being able to introduce and provide handoffs relative to the various departments that support. And I find a lot of organizations don't do a good job of that.
Now, would you go as far as saying, okay, you know, for a day or two, you have to go and shadow in pro services or shadow in the CS organization?
I think that's a great approach. I think that there is a dependency on what people have in the calendar, but I think spreading that across multiple people, if there are multiple people in pro services or in finance, what have you, I do think that's really important. I think it also provides some visibility into the day-to-day exercise that those other teams experience. And so when you're calling them and, you know, I don't understand why you're not picking up the phone, none of this has to be resolved 5 minutes ago, having that visibility and that understanding, it creates a different dynamic. And I think it also fosters a better sense of team.
Yes. It's interesting, as you were talking there, you know, probably like you, I've been lucky enough to work for some good sales leaders over the time. Remember me a club one time, and I forget who it was, one of the leaders said, you know, as I look around the room, one of the common things I see amongst the people here is they're very, very good at getting their unfair share of internal resources. You know, when they go and collaborate and work with these other teams because they need them on deals, they get their time. And, you know, for many people, it's not because they go demand it, right? It's because they actually have taken the time to build the relationships, go understand how are these teams measured, what's important to them, how can I help them be more successful, as opposed to being the prima donna rep sitting there going, you know, it's all about me, give me time, I need stuff from you for me to be successful. And, you know, the sellers that I know that are, you know, at that level, that's what they go do. They really truly understand what's important to these teams and make sure that they're doing what they can to help them succeed so that when it comes to, you know, having the ask, it's natural for them to go, sure, I'm absolutely here to help you.
100%. It's a team anymore. Selling is not about lone wolf. Selling is about utilizing the resources around you. Frankly, having everybody on the same page, knowing what they're going into, knowing what they're going to be working with, the people. I mean, talk about an opportunity. And too often, I think it's opportunity lost. For me, when I look at this as part of onboarding, I do think it's a critical path because there are so many resources out there that having them on the same page allows you to function better, allows you to create a better result faster. And that's important to all of us. Velocity, momentum. I mean, who doesn't want that?
Yeah, no kidding. It's so important, even at early stage companies, well, especially early stage companies where, you know, there's a lot of gray area about, you know, do we even have some of this stuff in place already? You're actually asking people not just to give it to you, but perhaps even create it. So it's really important to have that whole team aspect to what we're doing. EJ, let's learn a little bit more about you. I've got 35 questions here. I'm going to ask you to pick three numbers between 1 and 35, and I'll read out the question.
Two, please.
Two, iOS or Android?
Ooh, iOS all day.
Always iOS?
iOS all day.
So we recorded this on September the 13th, 2023, and yesterday was Apple's big reveal day about apparently not very much. it's a bit of a damn scoop, apparently. But they did say they're releasing a new version of iOS. I think it's next week for everyone. So we're keen to see what's in that versus what we have right now. Probably not a huge change, but we see new features, hopefully. Next number, team 1 and 35.
11, please.
11 is, what's one great hotel you've stayed at in the world?
Oof. Mexico, Playa Riviera. Awesome hotel. Absolutely awesome.
That's a nice part of the world down there.
It can be. It can be very interesting, but I happened to be there for a club trip, a resort, and absolutely amazing. One of the nicest resorts I've ever been to, and frankly, it was a phenomenal club trip, so had a great time.
Good stuff. All right, last number, team, 1 and 35.
18.
18 is dive bar or cocktail bar?
Wow, I need to get your list of questions. These are perfect interview questions. Dive bar.
Any favorite ones in your past that you remember?
Actually, there's a place called the Warren Tavern up in Massachusetts, Charleston. I quite like that place. I don't know that people would refer to it as a dive bar, but comparatively speaking, it could fit the bill. But I'll tell you, they have amazing food. It's, I think, primarily a local establishment and really phenomenal people.
Yeah, it's often the people at the dive bars that set the vibe for the place, right? Which can make it a little more fun or more interesting than maybe the cocktail bar for some.
I think that's exactly it. The people are everything.
For my third one, EJ, I'm going to go very specific here and be prescriptive on something that I strongly believe in. And it's kind of following on my second point about being clear about what you actually want to ramp people up in. And when I build programs for people these days, what I tell them is this. I said, you know, I think if you think about the success of your people coming in, there's two things they need to be able to do very well as quick as they possibly can. First one is to be able to go and do some sort of prospecting, right? So if they pick up the phone to a friendly, someone in their network, a partner that they've known for a while, you know, what do we need to do to get them ready for that, right? And what I say to people is, you know, we should orientate things around so that they are uncomfortably good enough at doing that by the end of the first week, all right? And that's a stretch, right? So kind of walking the door on Monday, by Friday, you know, can we get them in a position of confidence and competence to be able to pick up the phone to their old friend at the CISO or wherever and say, I joined a new company. We solve these sorts of problems. Let's go have some lunch and see if there's a way I can help you, right? So that's one thing. Get very prescriptive around that. And the second thing I think is, and it's a bit more of a heavy lift, is to say, okay, let's imagine that they then booked that first meeting with that CISO that was their buddy. And let's say their buddy, their internal mentor couldn't show up and their boss couldn't show up and suddenly they're just sitting there on their own. Can they run that first meeting on their own? Do they know enough? Can we give them enough? Can we train them enough? And then to the way I think about it is, can we certify them? So they're very clear about what it takes to run that first meeting, what they need to know, what they need to demonstrate in terms of knowledge and competence to so that we can sit there and go, holy crap, you know, Jimmy's out there on his own, but it's okay because, you know, last week I ran a mock first meeting with him and he's got his shit together, right? And I think he's going to be just fine. So I get very prescriptive around those two things. And this is going to sound weird to people, but my timeline I shoot for is the prospecting by the end of the first week, and then can they run the second meeting by the end of the second week? And the end of the second week is a huge stretch, and people are very uncomfortable. And I would say that's by design, right? Because it gives you a forcing function. And what I found is that not everyone, in fact, you know, out of probably 50-50, do people get to the point where they have the confidence and the competence for that first meeting then the second week. But that's okay, because what we've done is accelerated their timeline, that they might get it done by the end of the third week, let's say, right? In comparison to what I've often seen in programs before, which is they might get to that point after month one or month two, where we think that they're might be ready to go do that, right? So, you know, I say to people, look, this is good. Everyone's going to be uncomfortable doing this, but if we get the focus around it, you'll see the results in a lot shorter period of time. And most of the time, people trust me and we go with it and we build the program. Some people, they go, I don't know. There's always some reason. We're more complicated. We got more products. We got blah, blah, blah. Some reason why it's not possible. But I don't always believe them. But there's only so many battles you can win, right? But I think that orientation around being very specific and certify them. So actually go through some exercises to say, does this person know enough, can do enough that I feel like they could be out there on their own?
I think it's an interesting point. And I think it requires a level of awareness of leadership in the organization relative to what they're selling. I think as well, to a degree, even the ICP piece comes into play. Contacts come into play. I do really love the idea, though, of getting comfortable being uncomfortable. The people accelerate their learning and they accelerate into the effort when they embrace that mentality. You pushing that forward, I think it's interesting. And I think it's worth the investment to figure out how far, how hard you can push. Obviously, if you can put together the right formula to get to a better result faster, that's a win. All day long, it's a win. And I think consistently turning, you know, that process a little bit further, a little bit further, a little bit further to get to the point where you know exactly what it takes to get somebody into that position a week, 2 weeks in, a month in. I actually think that's an effort that's worth undertaking. Constant improvement is a huge part of this. And let's not forget that putting new reps in a position where they are developing momentum, where they feel like they are contributing and meaningful to a company and its go forward, it's a big piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that a couple of thoughts as you were talking there. You know, I have this belief that in any sort of training with salespeople, your job is to get them to, I don't know what, 60%, 70% ready or, you know, complete, let's say, whatever the training is. Because if you try and get them to 90, 100% through training, you'll spend a whole bunch of time trying to get them there when their learning at some point becomes better in the field as opposed to being, you know, on their own in a classroom behind their screen, whatever it might be. So when I say someone is ready for the first meeting, in reality, they're not really, right? Because if the conversation goes off on a tangent, they might get lost, right? But we got them to 60, 70% of the way there, and that's going to get them going. And I think just the starting is so important. So I think that's kind of one concept about doing that. The other thing that I find that's a tangential thing that comes out of this is that you often see what someone's like when they're under pressure in those first 2 weeks like that. And, you know, I've had new sellers come in and flat out tell me that's impossible. You know, I've had some come in and go, great, let me at it. Right. And they'll take the training that we give them and they'll go and do their own stuff. And then they'll demand they go on live calls and, you know, they'll start, you know, fighting for more resources. So they're ready for that second meeting because they don't want to get on a mock call with their VP of sales and look like an idiot. Right. So sometimes in that environment, you know, you see what someone's all about. And I don't mean that in a terrible way. I'm not trying to embarrass them or anything like that. But it's just interesting. You see some people, you know, react in different ways to what's possible and what's not possible. And by the way, I find that both virtual. So all the work I do right now is all virtual new hire and ramp programs. I used to find that when we did things in person. You know, I used to run programs where I was at Tinium for a while. We ran like 20 to 30 new hires every 2 months coming through for over a year. We were in, you know, acceleration mode at that point. And I was flat out told by people that you tell me the end of this week, I'm going to sit down with one of the sales leaders and go through a first meeting mock thing with them. They're like, I can't do that. So it was just fascinating seeing how some people reacted to it.
It's interesting how all of this comes back together, right? If you look at this in totality, there's a lot to consume here, but I also think that it's easily consumed. And then I think it becomes a, how do I fit this to my business, to what I'm selling? You know, some of these things aren't, they're going to play differently when your target is large enterprise and it is an enterprise solution. It's going to fit differently when it's a single product with maybe one or two buyers within an organization. I think all of those things start to play into this. But the sooner you figure it out, the sooner you start putting forth the effort to get to that result, the better off you're going to be. Constant twist, turn, tuning, if you will, to get it into a better place, huge. And Andrew, it's interesting to get this from the other side too. From a sales leader perspective, thinking about this in terms of how good can good become, or can you create it to become? It's an interesting perspective. 2 weeks. Tanium, I think of Tanium as a fairly big solution. I think of it as an enterprise-oriented solution. 2 weeks, I think that's aggressive. But I also think in today's day and age, I think you have to be aggressive. And I think you've got to constantly tune to figure out where you can make it more effective. So this has actually been good for me. I really appreciate it.
It's interesting. So let's talk about Tanium. I'm not giving any state secrets here about this. And I think that's a valid point. Tanium is an enterprise solution. You know, when I was there, I'm sure it's changed a lot now. But you know, I don't think you took a deal to the deal desk. It was under $500,000, right? They were going after big deals of big companies, complicated sales cycles, you know, multiple value props, things like that, right? But we had these people coming in and, you know, we couldn't train them on every single use case, right? You know, one of the things about Tanium is it's truly a platform and they had these, you know, lots of small little modules that were attached to the platform. And, you know, the temptation might be, first of all, let's train them in the modules and what all the modules do, right? And as we talked about, you know, just training in product is not really, you know, the right way to go. The second temptation is to say, well, let's train them in the use case for all the modules. And I would say that's a mistake because they're not going to remember it all, right? They're, at the end of the day, a new hire is a human being. There's only so much they can take in and then go use. So all becomes down to focus. So if I remember rightly, the way we actually had a in-person week. So you imagine someone joins, I don't know, let's say they join middle of the month. They might wait 2 or 3 weeks before the next actual, you know, boot camp happens. But in those 2 or 3 weeks, we got some pre-work. They're starting to do some research, things like that. And they show up for that week, right? And the culmination of that week on the Friday afternoon, Friday morning was they would get on the phone with one of the VPs of sales. And the VP was given the you know, you are the CISO at this company. And this new rep's going to run a first meeting with you, right? And they either pass or they fail. We gave both sides, here's a scorecard, here's all the things you can get marked up on, you know, and our job this week is to prep you ready for this mock meeting on Friday, right? So when we did this, if I remember rightly, what we had Monday was essentially the corporate, the company day. That's not right. Not company as in here's who we are and what we do, much more about the high level, you know, value prop, the big reason, the big why, the wow moment about what Tanium is all about, the things that we do differently as an overall platform. Probably a better way to think about it is platform was Monday. And then Tuesday and Wednesday were the use case days, right? So we would have most of Tuesday around one use case and most of Wednesday around the second use case. And that was it. We didn't do all 10. We picked the two that were the ones that are driving the most business that would get the rep in the door at a company. You know, if you go talk to someone who's in a leadership position about this sort of thing, they're more likely to want to say, tell me more, right? Rather than the esoteric use case number 9, which came out 3 times in the last year, but we won some business on the back of it, right? They'll learn that, but it's not the focus right now. And it was that concentration to say, let's get, you know, there's only so much they can take in. Let's make sure it's high impact things that they take in and take control of that. So that you know, they're ready for that Friday to then have the meeting with the VP of sales.
I think that there's value in that as well. Getting to the point where you really understand what are, you know, our top 2 use cases, what do customers typically buy on, especially as their leading acquisition, right? Their first buy. What's common across that? You've got 60 customers. 40 of them have bought for this use case, this buyer persona, beautiful. Rinse, repeat. Get to sustainability. I think that's a huge move. And I think companies understanding that, being able to support that versus edge use cases. I've seen that as well. The edge case that becomes the dominant play. And wait a minute, why? I think it's a point that's well made, worth companies paying attention to as part of their onboarding effort. Nicely done.
Well, let's wrap this up, EJ. You know, you've come to this from the sales leader perspective. Any final thoughts for a sales leader who's out there right now and they're thinking, yeah, we're getting, you know, headcount's starting to get approved again. We're going to be ramping up in Q4, or early Q1. How should I be approaching this? Any kind of final comments or words of inspiration for them?
I think looking at the 6 points that we've covered right here, figuring out how to put them into practice for your organization so that your onboarding is streamlined, it's efficient, it's effective, and it creates the right result. I think that's important. For me, I think that's a critical takeaway for leadership, is to figure out how to take some of these things or all of these things, maybe it's none, and put them into practice. These are lessons learned, sometimes at great cost, but utilizing them, figuring out how they impact or could impact you, I think that's an effort that's worth undertaking. And certainly the investment in people are everything. You want to win, have the right people doing the right things, you'll get there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. I mean, the real thing to understand is, you know, you're never going to be perfect, right? But, the impact of getting this wrong is deep, especially if you're early stage. You know, if you got 8 reps and you're adding 2 more, that's a high impact if it gets right, if you get it right, and also a high impact if you get it wrong, as opposed to, you know, adding 2 more reps to a team of 100. So, you know, it's one of these areas that is worth it. And I just add on to what you were saying, EJ, and say, I think that the first step is to be highly intentional about trying to get this right. If we're honest amongst ourselves, sales leaders, and all the rest of it, it's often a, you know, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th priority thing. And I understand it, right? I mean, you got board meeting next week and you got 5 big deals that have to be closed, and, you know, you got the CS on your back about something, and finance is saying we need to, you know, cut costs here or add people here, whatever it might be. There's a lot of other things going on, but this does have impact in the medium and long term. So it's worthwhile being very intentional about trying to do it right. But EJ, with that, listen, super excited for the conversation today. Really enjoyed it. Thanks so much for joining us. If someone wants to get in touch with you to talk more, what's the best way to do it?
Hit me on LinkedIn. Happy to DM back and forth and set something up. My profile is out there and I'm more than happy to engage and figure out how I can be of assistance. Andrew, I same question back to you. I know that you do a lot of this. And for me, this is actually really interesting and really good for me. As I think about what, you know, what I'm going to do and how I'm going to build, I think the insights from the other side, really quite good. And I would encourage companies to have this conversation with you one-on-one. And not as a shameless plug, but just as a, these little things, they're actually material and they create impact. If you believe that people are everything to a business being successful or not, make the right investment, do the right thing. Thank you.
No, I appreciate you giving me the plug. Yeah, as you can tell by my voice, sometimes when I get into these conversations, I get pretty passionate about this. I think I don't talk about this too much on the podcast, but I'll mention it right now. I just have a belief that in general, you know, salespeople at early stage startups, especially in cybersecurity, are hugely underserved. You know, they're expected to come on board and they're getting them some help a little bit here and there, and then they're left to their own devices. And some thrive, some don't thrive. Some really good people don't thrive. And, you know, but with just a little bit of help and thought about putting programs together like this, it could make a big difference. So, you know, having been in a situation myself where I've been at, you know, startups probably 2 or 3 times and seeing how things are underserved and seeing the impact of it, I believe this is worth it, which is why I get passionate about it.
Nice job. Well done, Andrew. I this is good for me. Thank you. And I really appreciate you inviting me to participate. Thank you.
Love it. All right. Talk soon. Take care. It would mean a lot to me and to the continued growth of the show if you'd help get the word out. So how do you do that easily? There are two ways. Firstly, just simply send a link to a friend. Send a link to the show, to this episode. You can email it, text it, Slack it, whatever works for you and is easy for you. The second way is to leave a super quick rating. And sometimes that can seem complicated, so I've made it as easy for you as I can. You simply have to go to ratethispodcast.com/cyber. That's ratethispodcast.com/cyber, and it explains exactly how to do it. Either of these ways will take you less than 30 seconds to do, and it will mean the world to me. So thank you.